Before we start this week's episode, we'd like to remind you folks that the Air Raid podcast is available at many places, including the Stitcher Radio app for your mobile device, iTunes, our website air-raid.net, and of course at www.cairoradio.com. Well, hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 231 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Yes, indeed, folks, we've got a veritable payload of awesome for your ears this week. Oh, my goodness. Oh my goodness, Aaron David Tate of the band Minus the Bear will be joining us here shortly in the backyard. Minus the Bear, I have been a huge fan of Minus the Bear ever since college, when their album Highly Refined Pirates came out. I literally, this is one of those albums that I did not take out of the CD player. Much to the chagrin of my roommates at the time, and I would just listen to it on repeat. We had this little Nintendo, this old Nintendo setup, and I would just play this game, The Adventures of like Kirby, or Kirby Land, or something to that effect, and I would just listen to Minus the Bear over and over and over again, and we'll feature some music from them. Aaron Tate is in a number of bands. He also is a manager of bands. And we're just going to talk about the whole range of stuff, man. Like to the inception of Minus the Bear. And then how he's kept music going in his life, because that's what he wants to do. And it's a really interesting story, and I hope you guys enjoy it. Let's do a couple of other things before we get into this interview. I'm sure most of you are aware, if you live here, stateside, that the Seahawks won and are going back to the Super Bowl as of yesterday. I gotta tell you, man, it was a very emotional game, and, I got the tears. I teared up, man, at the end of that game. It was nuts. I was sitting here with my kids, my daughter, Tatum, she's watching the iPad. She doesn't even know what's going on. My wife couldn't even watch the game anymore because it was going so, so south. And then as she left, they started picking back up. And so, you know, being like, kind of a, superstitious sports fan, she kind of stayed out and didn't watch the game. Like, she felt like that was what was giving them the go-ahead to make an amazing comeback in the fourth quarter. And so she stayed outside. Look, guys, I did not make my wife stay outside, okay? She chose to do this. She chose to clean the car in the last minutes of the fourth quarter, and we came back and we won the game in overtime, and it was fucking amazing. Pardon my French, but yeah, amazing game. I teared up a little bit, and man, so happy to see the Seahawks go back to the Super Bowl. Of course, this is not a sports show; this is a music show. So we'll get on with it, shall we? Yeah. I'm also gonna be had my first TV appearance. Recorded my first TV appearance. I'm going to be on three upcoming episodes of the show Band in Seattle, which is a local show. So if you're not here in Seattle, you won't be able to see it live. But we'll put it out there on the Facebook page. as to when those things go up, and you guys can check those out. So there'll be episodes with the Young Evils, Grinch, and let's see, what was the other one? Blood, Drugs, and Pony Time. Most of those people have been on the show before, so yeah, it's gonna be fun. I was super worried about my bald spot. If you remember our chat last week in the intro, my bald spot is getting bigger, I was very worried about that being on television. So hopefully that does not transfer over to the cameras. We'll have to see about that. I'm still very nervous about seeing myself on the television. I hope I just don't. Oh my God. I don't even want to think about it. I don't want to think about it. Shit. It's going to be bad, guys. It's going to be bad. Hey, if you are just joining us for the first time and you are bored shitless because of this horrible monologue, I would say, just fast forward through it. And, except for this part, visit our website at www.air-raid.net. Click on the archives tab and you can listen to all 231 episodes of the Air Raid podcast for free. Or you can subscribe to us on iTunes and get the latest 20 and, do it that way. But if you want to hear all the episodes with like Jim Brewer, Bob Saget, Aisha Tyler, Mike Birbiglia, Pete Holmes, comedians like that, Eddie Pepitone, man, Duncan Trussell, it's all there. Serious, wonderful conversations with all these people. Plus bands like Macklemore, Death Cab for Cutie, Mudhoney, Presidents of the United States of America, The Melvins, yeah, man, Sebado, Lou Barlow of Sebado, that was a good one. That was a good one. You can go to our website, air-raid.net, click on the archives tab, and find all of those things there. But we would urge you guys to go to iTunes as well, if you've got the time, and give us a little star rating on there. Rate the show on iTunes, because it really does help. Okay, now that that is out of the way, let's get with our first musical break here. And we're going to be, featuring music that Aaron Tate has been involved with, not only in the past, but now in the present. This one is called Monkey Knife Fight from Minus the Bear, off of one of my favorite albums of all time, Highly Refined Pirates. And we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears with Aaron Tate, drummer for Minus the Bear. All right, be back in a moment, folks. Did you ever have any idea how hard it was going to be?
Yes and no.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's one of those things that you always, you know, think to yourself, it can't be that bad.
Yeah.
And then you're, you know, knee deep in human feces and getting yelled at because they want gummies or something.
Right. Yeah, totally.
I will say that the terrible twos, though, I like more than the phase before it because at least she can tell me what she wants now.
Right.
You know, she can scream in my face that she wants yogurt instead of me running around the house being like, what the hell do you want? Stop yelling at me, kid.
I can't figure it out.
Yeah.
Why don't you know more sign language?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on, dummy.
It is. It's tough, man. Like, and the terrible twos have nothing on, like, the mid threes.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah.
Very excited.
Seriously, it's like, it just gets worse.
Yeah.
It just gets worse. Like, the temper tantrums, we deal with, like, temper tantrums all the time.
Yeah.
Now that are just, I mean, like, to the point, and I think she gets a lot of it from me because I have anger issues.
Oh, so do I.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
So we've got a lot in common.
It must run in the Aaron name.
That's true.
Just
That's
a couple
true.
Of psychopaths.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But it's like, it's just, I reach a certain breaking point at which I just have to give up and just lay on the couch.
Yeah.
That's like, I feel like that's probably like a normal dad thing to do.
The give up phase?
Yeah.
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 I give
right.
up.
We yeah. just like lock them in their bedroom in timeout and you just lay there and you just surf Twitter or something.
You know, we've never done a timeout.
You've never done a timeout?
Nope.
You've never had to do a timeout?
Nope. I've told her once, she poked the dog in the eye. We just got a new dog. And she poked the dog, and then the dog and her got really upset. And we told her that she had to apologize to the dog.
Mm-hmm.
Just to teach her a lesson, you know, apology. And she wouldn't do it, and she kept screaming no. And so we said, either you can go to your room or you can apologize to the dog. And so she walked into her room, which she had never done before. It was kind of weird. And then came back in and looked really sad in the doorway.
Yeah.
And then came in and gave the dog a hug and said she was sorry.
Well, but that's nice.
We're not the biggest discipliners over at the Tate House. We're maybe a little too nice. See how this one goes.
I've got to see. We need to stay in touch.
Yeah.
And then after this, because I want to hear how the rest of this goes for you.
When the beatings begin?
Yeah. I see. I was spanked as a child. My dad used to spank me.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Not like bad ones. Like he would just use his hand, mm-hmm. you know, for a long time. And then it got to the point where it would just be like, it didn't hurt anymore, you know?
You get used to the pain.
Not even that, like he just wasn't hitting me that hard.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. it was fine and I would act like it would still hurt.
Yeah, I never got spanked. My parents didn't.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe as an adult I have been, but
yeah.
Yeah.
But I wrestled with like this whole like not spanking thing. I had to wrestle with that in my mind, like, well, you know, how else are you supposed to discipline a kid?
I just couldn't imagine doing it.
Like I can't either.
Actually raising really. My hand to a child just seems crazy to me.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, definitely there's points where I've thought about it, you
yes.
know, when they're screaming and I have to go lay on the couch and surf Twitter.
Do your dad duty.
Yeah, do the dad duty. But yeah, I couldn't really actually imagine doing it.
Yeah, I can't either. And I will preface this with saying like I know in my heart of hearts that I will never do it.
Yeah.
Because I'm just not that kind of guy. But I did get to the point where I threatened my child with it.
Really?
Yeah. And she had no idea what it meant
yeah.
anyway. So it had no gravitas to it. You know,
yeah.
there was nothing. It didn't. And it got me in trouble with my wife, too. So
oh, yeah.
That's, you know, that's great.
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. I raised my voice at my child once. Not anything brutal or anything, but, you know, out of frustration. And,
yeah.
And then I just felt like a dick bag. Felt like an actual piece of shit for it, so I don't
You're
think
making me feel like a piece of shit
hey.
Because I raise my voice all the time.
I know. I just,
oh man.
Yeah.
See, but my daughter is 3.5 years old.
Yep.
So maybe there's still time. There's still time for
let's
you.
Hope so. We'll revisit this interview in a year and we'll see where
right.
we are.
You will come back in exactly a year.
My hair will be even more gray. That'd be good.
Excellent. Aaron Tate from Minus the Bear and the band Hands of the Hills joining me here in the backyard. Thank you, sir, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, this is a real treat, man. Like I was saying before we started recording, I was a huge fan, still am a huge fan of Minus the Bear. Becoming a fan of Hand of the Hills. Saw you guys play at the Do 206 party.
Yeah, we did 206.
Recently. Yeah.
We did it.
You did it.
Yeah, we dude'd it.
That was a great show, man.
Yeah, it was. It was great.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was the second party that we've thrown with them, with Do 206.
Oh, had you played a Do206.com party before?
We did a DJ party in the Crocodile Back Bar.
Oh, okay.
A couple months earlier.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
One of the bands that I manage, Slowbird, did an acoustic set.
Oh, you manage them?
Yes.
They were amazing because they played that night too.
They are incredible.
Holy shit. That was the first time I had heard them, man. And I was just like, I was totally blown away.
Yeah, where'd they come from?
I have no idea. You should probably know. You're the manager.
Well, I know. I know where they came from. They came from the gutters.
Yeah, they're great, man. Yeah. And they're on tour right now too, right?
They're about to be.
Oh, okay. It's about to start.
Yeah, in February, actually.
So awesome.
They're
awesome.
doing a week with Cursive.
Oh, the other band that you've played with.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. That's great. And we're going to feature music from that time that you were with Tim Kasher.
Yes.
A little bit later in the show as well. But like I said, I was a huge fan of Minus the Bear. When the album Highly Refined Pirates came out, I was in college. And I was in college. I was going to college with Michael Cooper. Well, I'm sure you know, from Roy.
Coop.
Yeah, the Coop, man.
Yep.
Who's now in a fantastic band, Cannon Canyon, which everybody should check out. But I think he was the one that kind of turned me on to that, and I didn't stop listening to it for probably a better part of a year. Like it was one of those CDs that just stayed in the CD player.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
Remember CDs?
Oh, yeah. 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 Back when those were big.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that was like, we had an old Nintendo, and I would pop in Adventures in Kirby, or you know the little puffball that would blow up and stuff?
Yeah.
I would play that game over and over again because it was easy to beat.
Yeah.
And I would just listen to Highly Refined Pirates on repeat.
Ah, okay.
Throughout that whole thing. Yeah.
It was an interesting time. I was a much younger man.
Were you?
Yes.
I guess it was. It was quite some years ago.
It was quite some.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. When did that? When did that album come out? I can't remember what year that was.
2001 or two.
It must have been two.
Must have been
two because we were living. I was not in the dorms at that time. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how long? So when did Minus the Bear start?
I think we started in 2001.
Oh, okay. So that must have been your second album?
Yeah, we did an EP first, and then that was the first full... Pirates was the first full length.
Gotcha, gotcha. And you're the drummer.
Correct.
Right?
I play the drums.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, the instruments with the skins.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And did you know all those guys? Because I know, like, there was a big, like, Tacoma, Washington contingent in that band, right?
Yeah, I was playing in a band called Kill Sadie that was from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Right.
And we all moved out here to fulfill our rock stardom dreams. Just kidding.
Like to Seattle?
Yeah.
Seattle proper?
Yep, we all moved out here. Okay. And we had met, in Minneapolis, we had met the Botch guys.
Yeah.
I don't even know if we played with them or if we just had similar friends in common or something. So... we moved out here and kind of started hanging around with them. And then Jake, the singer of Minus the Bear, was in a band called Sharks Keep Moving at the time. And we became really good friends. And Corey, the bass player, had moved up from New Mexico. And he was friends with all the Hydrahead guys, which is the label that Botch was on.
Sure, sure.
So he met Dave that way. And then we kind of all just started hanging out and decided to jam together.
Yeah.
And from what the ashes of those bands formed, Jay from Kill Sadie went on to be in Pretty Girls Make Graves.
Uh-huh.
Steve went on to be in These Arms Are Snakes, as well as Brian. And so it kind of formed, Minus the Bear, Pretty Girls, and the Snakes kind of all formed out of the breakups of Kill Sadie, Botch, Sharks Keep Moving, and Murder City Devils.
Right, yeah. Right. And you guys, like, I mean, those were all hardcore bands.
Yep.
And especially Botch. I mean, Botch was super, super heavy.
Brutal.
Brutal heavy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So good.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Like, and to know some of those guys now, like, it just blows my mind.
Yeah.
That I actually got to, you know, meet and become friends with some of those guys. But, so, I mean, those were all hardcore bands. And then you guys, minus the Bear Forms, and it's a much lighter tone.
Yeah, there was a
was that like a conscious decision?
Yes. There was a definite shift where Dave kind of started writing
Dave Knutson.
Yeah. Started writing some kind of tappy guitar line riffs that just weren't fitting into Botch songs, but he really liked what they were.
Yeah.
And I have never really been a fan of the heavy music. If it's good, it's good, and I can admit that. And Botch is one of those bands that I was just, even if I didn't like them, I had to like them because they were so good. And I wasn't that, you know, at that time it was like the first Justin Timberlake record had come out, Daft Punk came out, there was Fever by Kylie Minogue came out, and there was all these dance records that I was listening to and we kind of all started listening to. And
yeah,
to be honest, that's kind of some of what inspired some of that Highly Refined Pirates record.
Sure, I can totally hear that.
Some dancey, poppy music.
Yeah, it was like the beginnings of like true EDM, right?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. You guys were on the cusp, man.
Yeah, just doing the thing.
Well, Dave had this like innate power to kind of do those riffs that they really kind of use in like an EDM setting with electronic equipment on his actual guitar.
Yeah.
He was able to do that stuff and make those sounds come out of an actual guitar, which is amazing.
Yeah, we just wanted to try to do something that was different, and you know, it was different from anything that we had done, but it was also different from stuff that was going on around.
Sure.
I don't know if we succeeded in that, but that's what we were trying to do.
Yeah, I think you did.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So where did music start for you, man? Like, were you always a drummer?
Yeah. I have an older brother. He's 4 years older.
Uh-huh.
And when we were really young, I mean...
You grew up where? Over in Minneapolis?
I grew up in St. Paul, Minnesota, yeah.
Okay.
The Twin Cities. Yeah. My brother got really into Kiss, and so I got really into Kiss, you know. And we would put on makeup and jump around the house with brooms. And
you actually did the face painting.
Oh, heck yeah. As much as we could.
Yeah.
And we got really into it, and... My brother got a guitar. I never wanted to be a drummer. I was never a big drummer fan. I always wanted to be a guitar player, a bass player. And my brother got a guitar, and then his friend got a bass, and so they kind of stuck me with the drums and just said, we want to start a band, but you have to play drums. So there you go. Thanks, brother.
Yeah.
I got stuck on playing drums, and my parents bought me a set, which now being a parent, I'm like, I can't believe they did that.
Yeah, no shit.
I don't know. I mean, maybe I'd buy my daughter a drum set if she wanted one, but they're so loud and annoying.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I have the lucky pleasure of, if I was to get a drum set for my daughter, I could put it somewhere that wasn't my house.
Right, right.
You know.
You could keep it in one of the studio spots.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Right, right.
Yeah, so it wouldn't be so bangy and annoying. But yeah, that's really how it started, and we just started writing songs and discovered punk rock. And
so you were playing with your brother?
Yep.
This whole time?
I actually played with my brother my whole life until I moved here.
So he was in Kill Sadie too?
Yep.
He
was the original guitar player, but he didn't want to move out here with us. So.
Oh, really?
So we replaced him.
Wow.
You're fired.
Wow. How do you feel about that?
It was a drag. Yeah. You know, I've played my entire life. At that point, I'd played my entire life with him, but he needed to stay there and do what he needed to do, and I needed to get out of there. So
he's still playing and playing music too?
Yeah, he's in a few different bands, or
nice.
couple bands.
Awesome, awesome.
Good stuff.
Yeah. So what was, were your parents into music?
Not,
is that how that all started?
No, like, not really, actually. I'm not.
Two musical kids? How's that get going?
I swear to God, I don't think I've ever heard my dad listen to music.
Really?
There was one record that he ever heard on the radio that he liked, which was the first Hootie and the Blowfish record.
Oh, shit.
He liked that I Only Want to Be With You song. And
who doesn't?
It was a great song, right? I actually went out and I bought him the record because I was so excited that he actually liked something. And my mom always listened to music, but I can't really remember her having, like, you know, I think she listened to the Pointer Sisters. I remember that song Jump for My Love.
Sure, sure.
And, you know, she liked music, but I wouldn't call her, like, a music fan by any means.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if it comes
but
on...
they didn't play anything.
No.
They weren't, like, musical.
No, not at all. Yeah. So I'm not really sure where it came from.
Wow.
But no one, yeah, no one in my family really is.
Yeah. Did you have to take lessons?
I never did. I took, like... I took one when I was pretty young, and basically the guy just gave me a King Crimson record and was like, check this out. And that was kind of the extent of it. So I'm fairly self-taught.
Fantastic, man. That's a huge feat. Like, I tried to, I'm kind of self-taught on guitar. I'm not real. I wouldn't say like I'm like super good at it by any means.
I don't know how to play drums. I play them, but I don't know how to play them.
But you're a really good drummer.
Thank you. I'll take that as a compliment.
It was meant to be. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. Okay. But you know, I was in a band a little while back, and we would switch off. We were just a two-piece when we started, and we would switch off playing the drums. My buddy would play drums. I would play guitar. And then, you know, he would play bass, and I would play drums. And I never could get the hang of it. Like, this was in my mid-20s, so I was probably kind of past the point of, you know, really, truly being able to learn on my own, you know? I feel like you get to this certain point in your life, and you need assistance with learning how to do something.
It depends. I don't know. As you get older, you kind of lose your patience sometimes.
Maybe that plays into it. Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely.
It's a big part of it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just like anything, it just takes doing it and going at it, you know. Since I'm self-taught, I tend to be an overthinker because I don't, you know, I if you ask me to sit down and go paradiddle, blah, 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 I just can't do it. I don't even know what any of that stuff means.
I don't know what that means. I don't know what a paradiddle is.
It's like a drummer thing.
Okay.
Yeah, you wouldn't understand. but no, you know, I don't know how to do that stuff at all or, you know, the idea of writing a drum solo or anything, and so it's pretty funny.
Well, it's amazing that that yourself, a self-taught drummer, has made it, you know, this far. You know, I mean, like, made a career out of being a drummer.
Yeah, it's a lot of hard work.
That blows my mind.
Yeah, I mean, I've spent a large portion of my life, you know, having to quit jobs and sleeping on floors and being so far in debt and broke and, you know. But you just keep trying. It was, once we had started the Kill Sadie band while we were still in Minnesota, it was just kind of obvious that we went on our first tour right when I graduated high school.
Yeah.
And, it was just for me, and I just knew it was for me. And it was, if I wasn't going to be technically good at what I was going to do, I was going to at least try hard.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the motto I've always gone for, is just, you know, try and try. And
how did that first tour go?
It was shitty, but it was awesome. Yeah. It was super fun. I mean, I had traveled.
Did you do a full national tour?
It was like a 2.5 week West Coast East Coast and South kind of. I think we made it down to Atlanta and back. And it was really cool. I was never really into the hardcore punk rock scene, but some of the guys that were in the original lineup of that band were pretty well connected. So we ended up just meeting all these crazy, insane people, and the culture at that time was so embracing. Like, it, you know, if you knew this guy from South Carolina, he would hook you up with a show in North Carolina, and then you'd always have a place to stay, and people would, you know, it was really this kind of, if you were in that scene, someone would get you a basement show or someone would get you a living room show, and it just, you know, you could cram your crappy fucking gear in a van and just go out and do it. And, you know, you didn't need a booking agent. You didn't need any of that stuff. And, you know, some of those people that I met in that day are, you know, still good friends and still, you know, it's pretty great. It's, I was actually thinking about it the other day in this kind of weird way. I don't know if you've ever been to any Alcoholics Anonymous meetings.
No.
But there's this whole, you know, this whole thing with the AA that's like a, you know, this acceptance, this, it doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter what your story is. Like, you come in and these people will accept you, like, to the point where a stranger will call you and ask you for a ride to a meeting.
Sure.
Or a fucking stranger, you can call a stranger at 3 a.m. and talk to them. And there's just this community kind of thing is what, you know, their whole And then plus there's all the God crap. But I was kind of thinking about the back in the day, the punk rock scene was kind of like that almost, where you could like literally just, you know, call someone you didn't know and someone would bust their ass to help you get shows around town. And it was kind of cool. It was, you know,
yeah, it was almost, it was about paying it forward, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like you do a favor for somebody and you get a favor in return. Yep. When you need it.
Yep.
Yeah. That's a great thing.
Yeah, it was really great. It's, I mean, it's just not like that at all anymore. I mean, it is to some extent probably, but, you know, everyone is so, with the fact that there's, you know, a million bands and everyone's trying to make it all the time, you know, it's so booking agent, manager, PR, you know, it's just everything's so businessy. And there's, I mean, I'm super far out of the loop, you know, with the punk rock and DIY scene now. I'm assuming there's still probably a pretty healthy one around, but it's definitely not the same like it used to be.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you've come to, you know, an upper tier though in all of that, right? Like, I mean, minus the Bear has been fairly successful.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you guys get to travel all over the world playing shows and festivals and things like that. I mean, that's got to be pretty cool.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
Yeah,
it's
kind of.
I mean, it's you know, at a certain point, it turns into work, you know? It's
sure.
When it's your job, it ends up being work. And it's, I mean, granted, it's like one of the better jobs you can have if you're doing it. But, you know, just like anything, it has its ups and its downs. And, you know, it's like, oh, fuck. We couldn't get on this show or this show, so I'm absolutely broke for 3 months.
Oh, yeah.
And then all of a sudden, this show and this show come up, and it's like, cool, let's go take our daughter on a shopping spree.
Right.
You know, like, it's so, I mean, and with how busy the music industry is, it's really inconsistent.
Right.
You know?
Right, yeah.
Just, you know, it's all a roll of the dice and how hard you're willing to work and that kind of thing.
Yeah. So how old were you when Kill Sadie moved here to Seattle?
I was 20. We moved here in 99.
Okay.
Like March of 99.
So a couple years after you graduate high school, you guys get to the point where you're, what, like the scene is not happening enough in St. Paul?
Yeah, it was kind of one of those things where we all knew that we wanted to do it, and the best way for us to do it was to break ourselves out of our comfort zone.
Sure. Yeah.
To have that kind of scary feeling where you're, you know, you're not around your family, you're not around all of your friends, and you kind of just have to get out and do it.
Right.
So we moved here and started practicing every day because we had nothing else to do.
Right. And you probably didn't know too many people.
No,
either.
Hardly any at all. Right. So, yeah, it just kind of forced us. You know, it was kind of, I guess it was kind of the setup for turning. Even though Kill Sadie wasn't paying any bills by any means, in fact, it was costing every cent I had. But it was the setup for being able to kind of turn Minus the Bear into my job, where it was you know, just work, and hopefully something will come across.
Well, and learning how to like make it happen too, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like all the while you're learning new steps that you need to take, talking to different people, and blah blah blah.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing too.
Yeah, no, it's great.
Especially since you were probably not married at that point. You obviously did not have a child.
Correct. So, imagine if I did. Whoa.
Yeah, father of the year.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
You just gave me the heebie-jeebies.
But was there any fear associated with that? Like, were you the type of person that was just like, man, you know, moving to a new place with a band, to be in a band, and moving to, you know, an unfamiliar city to try to make this thing happen? Like, was there any fear there?
Absolutely. I was terrified.
Were you?
Yeah. I mean, you think about when you were 20 years old, and when you're 20, you're like, oh, I'm an adult, and blah, blah, blah. Like, fuck that. You're still a kid.
Yeah.
You know, I was childish. I'm still childish. I'm 30. Holy crap. I'm 36 now.
Yeah.
You know, it was really scary, but it was fun. You know, like when I first moved here, I couldn't even go to a bar or anything. And so, when you live in the rock and roll scene in Seattle, that's kind of what you do. And so, you know, the first bar I ever went to was Linda's up on Capitol Hill. And I was like, oh, this is what it's like. And you know, but it was really scary. It's still scary, kind of.
Yeah,
it's, you know, every time we go out on tour or do anything. It's, you know, just, you never know what the fuck you're getting yourself into.
Right.
You know, once you walk outside of your house, it's weird. Especially when you go to like countries you've never been to, or, you know, the first time we went to Japan, I was so scared I couldn't even take it. It was so fucking freaky.
Really? Yeah, how so?
Just, have you ever been?
No, I've never been to Japan.
It's just incredibly overwhelming.
Yeah.
It's, you know,
are we talking like Tokyo?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Okay.
Like, yeah. Because we flew into Tokyo and stuck around for a couple of days, mm-hmm. played our first show there.
How'd that show go?
It was good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Sold out?
No.
No?
No. Everyone that I knew, all of my friends' bands that had been to Japan were in like pop bands or rock pop bands. And it was one of those situations that when, you know, they landed at the airport and there were fans there.
Really?
And, you know, showing up to shows and just signing tons of autographs and taking pictures with everyone.
Yeah.
And then little old Minus the Bear steps in and it was like, oh, this isn't like this at all. I mean, it was, you know, to some, like, you know,
was that kind of crushing? Were like,
no,
were you expecting it?
It was real life.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't crushing at all.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, it was just, it was an honor to be 24 years old and get to go to Tokyo to play music.
You know, yeah,
was,
sure, sure.
I didn't give a shit if people were at the shows. I just wanted to go.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, there was 100, 150 people, which, I mean, your first time in a new country probably isn't too bad.
That's not bad, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's, you know, it's scary. It's weird.
Just like just thinking about like where your next meal is going to come from.
Yeah. Or how to order food right. or get around or make sure you're not lost because you don't have a cell phone.
Had none of the other guys ever been to Japan before?
No, it was all of our first time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah. Bocce had done touring in Europe, a pretty decent amount actually, but mm-hmm. none of us had ever really traveled. Some of the guys had traveled over there, like, you know, backpacking across Europe or
sure,
that kind of
yeah.
stuff. Or
yeah.
I think Jake and his wife had been over there a couple times together, but.
Well, a lot of the clubs in Europe, I'm guessing they speak English.
Yeah.
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 And then there's those people who are just mean and they don't want to speak English to you.
Right.
And I'm like, help me order a sandwich, please.
Anything.
I'm trying to get a beer.
Sapporo.
Yeah.
Sapporo.
Yeah.
That's all you have to say.
Just point at it.
Yeah. That's right. That's yeah. right. Oh my God, that's crazy. So you're 24 years old. Kill Sadie has you know, disbanded and branched off into all these now amazing bands, including Minus the Bear. And what, like, what's the first inkling that this would be? I know you said earlier that when Minus the Bear came around, you came to the conclusion that this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
For the rest of my life. What triggered that feeling? Do you remember?
There was just, there was a certain amount of like, enthusiasm and commitment that the five of us had right away. Like as soon as we wrote, our first EP, this is what I know about being gigantic, EP, it was something just clicked kind of right away with all of us.
Uh-huh.
And we knew that it was like, okay, this is our band, go.
Yeah.
And it was pretty funny because when we first started, everyone around us was like, holy shit, you guys are going to be huge. And it was the first time that anyone had ever told me anything besides like, your band's okay.
Yeah.
You know, it was like the first time that I'd ever like,
yeah, I'll come to your show.
Yeah, exactly.
And then not show up.
You guys were really loud. A lot of that kind of stuff. And so I was like, oh, like, that's cool. If someone's telling me we're going to be huge, maybe we should try hard. And then the first couple of years, it was definitely, we weren't huge at all.
It was, you know, a slog.
I mean, it was very much like, you know, a Kill Sadie tour, but there was all of this because we were ex-members of, you know, especially Botch, but, you know, some people knew who Kill Sadie and Sharks Keep Moving were. But, you know, we were one of those ex-member bands that were so the rage
mm-hmm.
at the time. And you know, the fact that Pretty Girls and the Snakes had also started this thing for all three of us where, you know, where people were talking about it and stuff.
Right, right.
But it was definitely, I mean, it wasn't big, but, you know, it was all five, six of us sleeping in one hotel room and never made any money. And, you know, it was really brutal the first few years for sure.
Did you have, you must have had to hold down like a kind of a job.
Oh yeah. I worked at Mailboxes, et cetera, on the Ave.
Nice.
Yep. The U
Dream
District.
Job.
It was great.
Yeah.
I loved it.
You could take a like time off from that?
Yeah.
And go on tour?
Yeah.
For months?
My boss was real cool, yeah.
That's amazing, man.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. So that's around the time that you were just like, this is happening.
Yeah.
When you first heard people start talking about it.
Yeah.
That's got to be a pretty cool feeling, man.
It was really cool.
Yeah.
It was, you know, it's what, you know, at that point, my brother and I, like I said, we started really young. So I've been playing shows since I was 10.
Yeah.
12, you know, somewhere in that range. And it was, you know, it was like, Minus the Bear signed with Suicide Squeeze Records right away.
Yeah.
Because actually David from Suicide Squeeze had a mailbox at Mailboxes, et cetera.
What?
Which is how we got to know him.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny.
Best guy.
Was it a situation where you were like, you just got to talking with this guy and you were like, hey, I'm in a band. You should check us out.
Yeah, kind of. I mean,
really?
I don't know if you've ever met David, but
no, I haven't.
He's honestly probably the nicest person in the music industry.
Yeah.
Like, no one is cooler than that guy. He's so great. And he's just friendly. And, you know, I'd get his mail for him and he'd get packages and we would talk. And, you know, I found out that, you know, he was releasing singles from Modest Mouse and Elliott Smith and Red Stars Theory and just all of this stuff that I was like, holy cow, like this guy is legit.
Yeah.
And, we would just talk. I mean, he's so friendly and so nice that we just kind of got to talking. And it was always like my wish that he would do a Kill Sadie record, and it just wasn't his cup of tea, which I got. And then, he found out that about Minus the Bear, and I played him our demos of two songs, and he was like, I'll do a 7-inch. And we're like, okay, cool. And then, he listened to the two songs and said, fuck it, let's do an EP.
Yeah.
Here's money. Just go in and record it.
Wow.
So,
so at that point you're vindicated, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is what you have been working towards.
Yeah, we're on a legitimate Seattle label.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And legitimate national label. I mean, that label had clout wherever you went.
Yeah.
Right? Suicide Squeeze. Amazing.
The funny thing actually is that the label that Kill Sadie was on was called Dim Mock Records.
Never even heard. Never
well,
heard of
that. Do you know who Steve Aoki is?
Yes.
It's Steve Aoki's label.
Oh. Really?
Yeah, which is really funny because he is...
So it's still around?
I think he still puts stuff out every now and then when he's not busy DJing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. When we met Steve Aoki, he was running a... he used to run a punk rock house out of Goleta, California called the Pickle Patch, which is where every hardcore band or punk rock band would play.
Yeah.
And Steve Aoki is this insane, vegan, straight edge, political...
Right.
Crazy man.
Yeah.
Who later we find out, you know, his sister is Devon Aoki, the famous actress. His dad owns Benihana. So he's just a rich kid, really.
His dad owns Benihana?
Yeah, yeah.
No shit.
So he's a total rich kid.
Oh my God.
And now he's this like DJ superstar.
Yeah, he's like a totally insane DJ.
But yeah, he put out he used to just, you know, totally put out punk rock records. And so.
No shit.
Anyways,
that's crazy.
I just always, you know, it's always funny to make fun of Steve.
Do you keep in touch with him at all?
We run into each other every now and then. Yeah. He's really busy.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure. Well, you probably run into him at some of these festivals, right?
Yeah. We ran into him in Europe last year.
Uh-huh.
It was good to see him. He's a sweet, he's a really great guy.
Yeah.
It's just funny. Actually, Kill Sadie got him drunk for his first time ever.
Got a straight edge guy drunk?
Uh-huh. We were on the last Kill Sadie tour. We were staying at his house. We actually have video footage of it, which I should probably blackmail him with at some point. But he was like, fuck it, it's the last Kill Sadie tour. I'll drink with you guys tonight. And I kind of feel like if he wouldn't have done it that night with us, that he would have never gone down this party DJ road. I feel like he owes me some money or something.
You started it.
Yeah. Cause,
so he's no longer straight edge.
Oh, no. It hasn't been since that night. Because he started drinking and he started getting into like going out to bars in LA.
No way.
And he started hooking up with DJs. And it's really random and weird, but.
You like started an upward spiral.
Yeah.
For this guy.
Yeah. I think he owes me like a fucking royalty check. I'm glad I bought that $2 chuck and a bottle of like Jägermeister or something.
Now, let me ask you this. How much did it take to get Steve Aoki drunk?
Not very much.
I would imagine.
Oh, man. It was a funny night.
Yeah. Two sips.
Wasted.
Just
trashed out of his mind.
Absolutely out of his mind. That's so funny. Oh, my God.
Anyhow, back to whatever we were talking about.
Oh, that's fantastic. So you guys get hooked up with Suicide Squeeze. Is this like a dream come true moment for you? You must have, obviously you knew a lot about Suicide Squeeze. Like they were putting out Elliott Smith stuff and Modest Mouse. That was huge stuff.
Yeah.
You know, around 2001, 2002.
No, yeah.
It was, or I guess 2000.
Yeah.
Is probably when that happened.
I mean,
right?
Technically it's probably pretty huge still.
Yeah.
I've heard of Elliott Smith.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was amazing. It's like really when it began. I mean, I don't know how everyone else in the band feels, but I mean, David Dickinson really like helped us and put us on the map. I mean, within a month or two of being a band, he got us a booking agent, which, I think Botch might have had a booking agent, but none of us had ever had one. You know, mm-hmm. I'd always booked every tour Kill Sadie had done. And, we got a booking agent and we got a publicist, Julie Butterfield. Do you know her?
No.
She does stuff for Sub Pop, and she was like Sleater-Kinney's PR person forever.
Oh, I may have corresponded with her a couple times then.
But yeah, it was just this like, oh my God, we have like a team behind us that wasn't just like us doing it. And it was like, okay, we can work our shitty jobs and then write music and then go on tour. And,
yeah.
And it was really, like I said, it was how I knew that this is what we were going to do. Was kind of the start of all of that.
Yeah, that's fantastic, man. Well, let's go to our second musical break. We're featuring music that you've been associated with. This song is from the artist Tim Kasher of Cursive.
Yes.
Right? This is his solo album, which you played on.
Yeah.
And the song is called Cold Love, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears with special guests this week, Aaron David Tate of Minus the Bear and Hand of the Hills. All right. Cold Love by Tim Kasher, and we'll be right back. Stay with us. Like everything was kind of ramping up. I remember, like, when I first became aware of Minus the Bear, like, I remember, like, after I had found out about you guys and started following, like, you know, what was going on, like, things were ramping up for you guys. Like, people were excited about you. And you stated earlier that, you know, it was exciting at first, and then, of course, it becomes a job.
Yeah.
Right? So when did it become a job?
When did we quit our jobs? I think we quit our jobs after the second record, the Menace El Oso record.
Okay.
That was amazing. We had gone into...
I love that. That was a good record.
Thank you. We had... at the time, we had just kind of finished all of the touring for Highly Refined Pirates. And Dave and I, excuse me, Matt Bayless, who was playing keyboards for us at the time, got really busy recording a bunch of records. Our bass player,
Corey, started Red Room. The Red Room studio, was that,
at
that
not point? Not quite at that point. It was getting there.
Gotcha.
But he started really picking up momentum, and then our bass player had kind of a family thing going on. He kind of needed to check out for a little while. I mean, he was still in the band and everything, but he just, as far as writing and kind of being around, he went to Florida for a little bit to visit some of our friends, and then Jake, our singer, kind of stayed at home. And so Dave and I started going down to the practice space more and more, because we were slowly starting to make a little bit more money, so we didn't have to work quite as much.
Yeah.
And we both started really, really, I guess it's legal here now, we started smoking a lot more pot.
Uh-huh.
Like at practice and and stuff, and we started getting really into like more kind of like glitchy electronic music. Prefuse 73, The Books, I mean, whatever. But so we DJ Shadow, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we would sit around and just kind of smoke and listen to music at the practice space. And that was when Dave kind of started getting the idea that he didn't want to play his guitar anymore. He wanted to sample things into a pedal and then just play pedals and make glitchy sounds.
Really?
And I, coming from, I mean, I love electronic music. And like I said, with, you know, we're listening to Justin Timberlake and Daft Punk and stuff before that. Yeah. But I've always been like a really big, huge hip hop fan and stuff. And so I said, okay, you know, Dave, let's go a completely different direction and let's try doing something even more different than we had done before. And so it kind of spawned that record in this sense where literally, I think the opening track on that record, like Dave even barely plays guitar. It's just, you know, DL4 pedals and sampling. And you know, we like played it for the other guys, and they were just like, "What the fuck are you guys doing in here?" and at that point we knew we were onto something. You know, we had just spent a couple years touring with each other, and when your bandmate looks you in the face and says, "I have no idea what you're doing. Like, how do I even play along to this?" You know, that was a high five moment for Dave and I. We were just like, "Cool, it's weird. Let's go with it. Let's do something even weirder." And really, the turning point, I think, was we did a, this was like kind of the turning point for the band, was that we recorded that record and spent a lot more time recording that record than we had ever spent. We did like basic tracks, and then we did all the, most of the overdubbing at Jake's house, which gave us the freedom of taking our time and really diving into sampling and you know, background stuff. And so we recorded the record.
This was the Ice Planet record?
No, this is a Menaceloso.
Oh, okay.
So it was our second record.
Okay, gotcha.
Kind of leading up to when we could quit our jobs.
Yeah, yeah.
And
sorry, I got lost.
Oh, no, it's... Dude,
I do that sometimes.
We have like a billion records. It's, it gets annoying. I can't even remember most of them. But we did... So we finished recording the record.
Uh-huh.
And we got asked to do... Alternative Press Magazine asked us to do an AP tour, which none of us wanted to do, but our booking agent was like, you should do this. And it was with a band called the Straylight Run. Have you ever heard of them?
No. Huh.
So it was, do you know Taking Back Sunday?
Yes.
Two of the guys from Taking Back Sunday quit their band and started the Straylight Run.
Okay.
So it was when we got...
So it was like that pop, that power pop punk.
Yeah, not our cup basically. Of tea by any means, but Straylight Run, we found out like the singer John wore like a Minus the Bear shirt in their video. And they got offered this AP tour and said, the only way we'll do it is if Minus the Bear's main support. You have to give them whatever they want, and that's the only way we'll do this tour. And so AP said, okay, and we said, okay. At that point, we had never, you know, we had never really done anything like that before.
Yeah.
And so we went out and we played these, you know, big-ass sold-out House of Blues shows, and it was... you know, like, holy shit, this is amazing. And we had finished Menaceloso at that point, and the record leaked while we were it leaked right after that tour, and it was the first time
like somebody put it on like Napster or something like
that. Yeah, or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Lars Ulrich was pissed. I would say delete that. no, so it was the record leaked, and it was the first time, you know, we were all pissed off because it was the first time that you know, anyone gave a shit about anything that any of us had done.
Right.
And all it did was, it was amazing.
Added fuel to the fire.
It added fuel to the fire. And we did a headlining tour kind of right after that. And our shows doubled, tripled. Like, we started selling shows out in advance for the first time.
Yeah. What year are we talking? 2003?
Sure. I don't know. You can look it up on Wikipedia. Okay. No, I mean, it might have been a little, I'm really bad with dates.
I am too. That's why I'm asking.
Yeah. But that was it. And that was, you know, that was the like literally that record leaking, I think, was the momentum and the kick in the dick. I think we all quit our jobs at that point.
Yeah.
And then we just started touring our asses off. And, you know, there was a good handful of years where we toured, you know, between overseas and here, I'd say we would tour like 6 to 8 months out of the year.
Yeah.
And it ruled. I mean, we were just in a van and...
Did you love it?
Yeah,
I loved it. Did you love that life?
Yeah, it was, you know, being 24, 25 years old, it was like after, you know, 15 years of trying hard, I mean, as much as a 12-year-old can try hard or whatever, it was great. And it was really the point where I knew that we without sounding like... I knew we had something.
Right.
You know, we knew we had something there, that it was... that we could keep going for a while. And we've always been, you know, we've always been really close and really good friends. And I think that that helps. I mean, you know, we all hate each other probably, but at the same time, we all have each other's backs. And it was the first time that, you know, we all were able to just play music for a living and concentrate on doing that. And so
that's got to be an amazing feeling.
Yeah, it was great.
Like your art is being appreciated.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it was cool.
That's, I mean,
it was
really
like
awesome.
Kind of the beginning of busting our asses like crazy.
Oh, sure,
But it was really amazing.
But then you got to keep up the business side of things,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then you're working with the booking agent and the PR people and everything like that.
Manager.
Like, that's a huge change.
Yeah.
It's got to be stressful too, right?
Yeah, it is. It's really, you know, I mean, at that point, it's like figuring out how to not be boring, figuring out how to try something new or do something new, and just be relevant, really, you know?
Right.
I mean, there's
stay relevant.
Exactly. I mean, there's not many bands there's not a lot of bands that can do it, but, you know.
Do you feel like you guys have achieved that?
I think so. We're still going, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we're still writing songs and doing records and whatnot.
Yeah. Does it still have the same, like, because you still go on these, like, on these festival, you play the festival circuit.
Yeah.
Like you said, last year you were in Europe playing some festivals over there, right?
Yeah.
Which, what festivals were those?
I don't know.
Do you remember?
No.
I remember seeing your pictures because we're friends on, like, Facebook and Instagram and stuff like that. I remember seeing some pictures of those. But, like, does it still have the same spark for you?
Yes and no.
Doing that kind of stuff?
Yes and no. It's different now. I mean, and and for me personally, I can't speak for everyone else, but, you know, getting older is definitely, start getting more tired and, you know, you're
enthused. And now you got a kid.
Yeah.
You're thinking about your kid.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Are you able to bring her along? Like on any of this
my,
stuff?
My daughter's never come out.
Yeah.
Jake's son, Jackson, has come out with us a couple times.
Uh-huh. How old's he?
He is 3 and a half now.
Okay.
Yeah, he's just a little bit older than
or maybe
3 and a half.
Do you ever like want to bring your kid along and like have her see what daddy does?
Yeah, for sure. And I'm sure it'll happen at some point.
Sure.
It's cool. Like when she was a baby, we had talked about it. But then it was like, being on a tour bus is great because it's not being in a van and you don't have to drive or whatever. But then if you think of it, you know, when we go on tour, we have, at least we had been, 5 crew members and then 5 of us and then a driver.
Yeah, the bus.
Yeah, so it's like putting 11 people in a submarine.
Yeah, it's
you
tight.
You know, it's very tight, and it's amazing because you don't have to drive and you have your own bunk that you can go to, but like then you add a wife and you add a kid and then you add, you know, diapers and babies crying.
Oh,
and,
sure.
you know, when people are sleeping, they want to just sleep so they can rest for the show. And if there's a screaming kid at 3 in the morning, it's not very fun. And
yeah. Well, that's why they just fly out. They just fly out for, like, a show or something.
Yeah,
like
totally.
That, right?
I mean, we'll do that kind of stuff. Yeah. But, yeah.
I think, like, that's my dream.
Yeah.
Like, just to have my kid feel like, oh, daddy's doing something really cool.
Yeah, for sure.
Because she doesn't realize it. She meets all these fucking crazy, awesome people that come through the house, right?
Yeah.
Like, she met you today.
Yeah, she showed
didn't
me.
Know who you are.
She showed me her touchdown dance.
Yeah, she showed you her touchdown dance.
Yeah, Russell Wilson.
Yeah, that's right. And like, she doesn't give a shit.
Yeah,
man. I'm like projecting like this feeling that I want her to have. Like, oh, your dad is doing something really cool.
Yeah. No. Phoebe is only she's only come out to one thing. We did an in store when the last record came out, and that's the only thing she's actually been to.
Yeah.
I'm guessing now that she's getting older, she'll probably come out to a show now.
That'll be cool, man.
Yeah, it'll be great. Yeah.
Are you excited for that?
Yeah, I totally am. I mean, she's the coolest. Like, she's so into music, and my wife is a piano teacher, and she plays in a couple local bands as well.
Oh, cool.
And so when Phoebe was really young, she was really into piano because that's what mom did. But now she's really into playing drums, and she always goes, "Dad, I want the drums." So I always try to take little videos of her playing drums. And that's really cute. Yeah. But yeah,
That's another one of my dreams is to have my daughter play drums.
Yeah.
Like that.
Well, I can teach her.
I want the. Do you do lessons now too?
I have.
Yeah.
My wife runs a music school in West Seattle.
Oh, cool.
So she's got over 200 students and.
Oh, wow.
I think we have 9 employees.
Oh my God.
Drums, bass, guitar, piano, vocals.
Is it one of the School of Rock places?
It's
or
not.
Something
it's,
like it's, along those lines?
It's along those lines, yeah. We do it a bit different, though.
Cool, man. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So so now you've gone into, like, I mean, Minus the Bear is still doing their thing, but now you've stacked on, like, being a band manager. You've started Phone Home Management.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And then you're also playing in another band called Hand of the Hills.
Correct.
Why? Why put more on your plate?
Because I'm a workaholic.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And you even come and do interviews when you're sick.
Yes. better hose down this microphone. Hand of the Hill started because I met David, the singer of the band.
Yeah, who was in the Quiet Ones.
Yeah.
Another one of my freaking favorite bands in Seattle.
Yeah, I saw my wife actually played keyboard in the Quiet Ones.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when they had a female keyboard player, that was her. And so I would go to their shows, and David was basically the lead guitar player and backup singer.
Right, right.
And he had like a song or two that he would sing, and then his brother John was the lead singer, and it always blew my mind that he wasn't the front man of a band, because I just thought I was blown away by him.
Yeah.
And so
the Totten brothers, man. There's so much talent in that family.
What's going on with those guys?
No idea.
Yeah. I think, David's twin brother, Chris was actually playing drums at the time. So it was all three of them. David and I started hanging out, and it was kind of just me and him got along really well. And, I'm used to rehearsing 5 days a week. I try to treat music like my job. And the Minus the Bear guys wanted to, rehearse 3 times a week or, never on weekends. And
Right.
I just love playing music so much. And the fact that I can do it for a living, I don't want to like ever half-ass it, even with anything else going on. It's just, it's got to be the focus of my life.
Yeah. So you had some gaps.
Yeah.
Right.
And so we started doing that, and it's very like, Minus the Bear is my band, and Hand of the Hills is what I do when I have free time. And they've even played shows without me. They just opened up for Blitz and Trapper, did a Portland and Seattle show
me.
And so, it's one of those things that I do it when I'm in town, and then when I'm not in town, they have someone else come in and do it. But yeah, it was great. I mean, David and I just hit it off right away, and we found Matt, our guitar player, and it was immediately just the three of us clicked. And we recorded a 7-inch. We were originally called Black Hills,
right?
And played a few shows with Black Hills and released the 7-inch under that name. And then
found out there was another band.
Yeah, we got a message from a guy threatening to sue us, so we had to change the name, which is a drag. Sorry, Porchlight Records, for putting out that 7-inch that will never sell anything.
No, it was on Porchlight Records.
Yeah, poor Zach. I'm sorry.
Oh no.
Yeah, it was a drag. But yeah, we recorded a full length a while ago.
Yeah.
With Matt Bayless, which is mm-hmm. done, and the full length turned out amazing, and everyone we played it for loves it. But no record label wanted to touch it. Like every single label that we sent it to was like, "This is so good, I have no idea what to do with it." And then every label would pass it to a friend who would pass it to a friend, and everyone would contact me, but no one would want to put it out. So we eventually ended up doing a Kickstarter for it.
Yeah.
Which made me feel kind of icky at first, but then, I mean, fuck it. Just put music out, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so
if
that...
people are willing to
yeah, know, we had a very low...
Give
I mean,
a couple bones for it. Yeah.
Yeah, we had a very low goal, so we set it, and the record is, I think, coming out in February.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you've got an EP available right now.
Yep.
Which people can find at handofthehills.bandcamp.com, and you can check it out there. Yeah, the Kickstarter thing, man, like, do you still feel the same way about that?
It is, you know, it is what it is.
Because a lot of people use it for that thing.
It's really weird to
recording.
Me. It's really weird to me when a band who... has the money to record and has the money, the means
that's
to put out a record.
That's what bugs
does
me.
A Kickstarter.
Right. Right.
I just recently spoke to, I shouldn't name any names, but I just recently spoke to a woman who plays in a band with a woman who plays in a band with a guitar player who is in the guitar player is in, he has a solo project,
yeah.
but he's also in a very, very famous Seattle band, like legendary Seattle band.
Okay.
And, I met this girl and she was like, yeah, I play with so-and-so in his solo project. And I was like, holy cow, like you fucking play music with that dude. And, she sent me a link to their thing and it was a Kickstarter.
Yeah.
And I was like,
I think I know who you're talking
and
about.
And I was like, are you serious? And she's like, yeah, people don't necessarily want to hear blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, you know what? That guy off, I can name, a few singles that guy made enough money off of those singles that I guarantee you he can fucking afford to put out a record himself.
That's what, that bugs the shit out of me.
And, to each his own. Hand of the Hills couldn't afford it, and it was getting to the point where, like, David was trying to pick up, like, extra shifts at work to do it, and I was in a bit of a touring hiatus, or Minus of Arrows in a bit of a touring hiatus, so
right,
I wasn't
right.
Because that's the only way we make money, because people don't sell records anymore,
right?
And so it was kind of like either we do this or we just put the record out for free and lose the money that we spent already on doing it. So it, at first it made me feel icky, but kind of now I'm fine with it, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, definitely there's some real weirdness there, like I have a few friends' bands that have done it, and it's like the only way their record would have actually come out was because of that.
Oh, sure.
At that point, if, the people that have heard the music or the people that are dedicated enough, like, bless them, like, that's so sweet to help people do what they want to do,
Yeah, yeah.
I've donated to a few Kickstarters myself.
I have as well.
Yeah.
I have as well. Prom Queen.
Yeah.
She had this record that was, like, being coupled with, like, all these videos for each song.
Yeah.
Which came out on, like, Blu-ray and DVD and stuff, and it just turned out amazing.
Yeah.
I donated to that. I donated to Marco Collins, like, documentary.
Yep.
That's being made. And I think those are actually the only two that I've donated, so I apologize.
I did one for a book. A photographer friend of ours uh-huh. put out a book, and we did a Kickstarter for him, and then... Slow Bird did a Kickstarter for their first record.
Oh, cool. Yeah, yeah. But there were some friends of mine that did a Kickstarter for their first record, and they wanted $30,000.
Yeah.
And I was like, that is not how much a first record costs.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know,
That does not add up.
It's a thing in this day and age, though, is that people don't... I mean, going back to... like I was saying earlier, in that the time 10, 15 years ago, like, the music industry has changed so much that there's people out there that just have no fucking idea about anything. And they just, they're like, cool, we're going to record this record for $30,000 and we're going to be huge.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, you're not. You're going to have to go out and bust your ass because there's another band that sounds exactly like you that probably has your band name also,
Black Hills.
Yeah, exactly. You're not original, Black Hills.
Oh, man. So are you happy with what you're doing now, man?
Yeah, it's going good.
Are you in a good spot? Like, I know you're busy. You got the management stuff going on. You got two bands.
Minus the Bears writing right now. They just did a tour without me. I took a tour hiatus to get my mental self back in order.
That's good.
I had a little bit of a freak out, kind of.
What happened?
Kid, I don't know.
Being just like kind of dad trying to figure things out.
Yeah, just figuring things out kind of stuff. And, you know, I don't want to really get too deep into it.
I'm not going to press you on it.
No, I had a really hard time and I ended up having to get some help. Not that, like I said, nothing major, but it was, Minus the Bear had a tour planned and it was kind of, you guys go, you know, just do this one without me. I'm still in the band. I literally couldn't, at that point in my life, I couldn't have imagined going out on tour.
Yeah.
It would have been too much for me.
Uh-huh.
And I just needed to kind of stay home and focus on getting myself together in order to, because we are writing a new record. And in order to, you know, once the record comes out, we're going to go back on tour forever. And in order to do that this coming up year, I kind of needed to just take a break. So they did a tour without me. Which was
well, that's great that they would, you know, that you guys are close enough that can happen.
Yeah, totally. Right? No, I mean, like I said earlier, like we're all tight, and that's kind of a good thing. And you know, it was good for everyone. I think, you know, they needed me to kind of snap out of it a little bit, and I needed myself to snap out of it. So
sure.
So yeah, we're writing another record, and then like I said, the Hand of the Hills record is coming out, playing locally, and then if trying to find a booking agent, just because I don't want to book tours, because it's too much work. But then yeah, the manager thing has been really great and really crazy. We have, me and my partner Nathan have 8 bands.
We right got now. Slowbird.
We have The Velveteen.
Yeah.
Slowbird, Ibu, Amy Blaschke. Do you remember her? Mm-mm. She used to be a Seattle artist. She lives in LA now. Hand of the Hills, this band called Hot Victory from Portland.
I've heard of them, yeah.
They're so good.
Yeah.
They're amazing. A band called Bear on Fire from LA, which is actually...
Minus the Bear cover band.
No, I wish. It's actually, it's funny. They hate when I say this, but it's a famous actor's band.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And, you know, he's doing that. We wrestled, because he's a really good friend of mine,
uh-huh.
And we wrestled with, do we really want to represent an actor's band?
Who is it?
But, his name's Chris Mintz.
Chris Mintz.
Better known as McLovin.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I saw the pictures with him.
Yeah. He's a great guy. He's phenomenal. He's in a couple bands. He plays drums in one band, and then he plays bass in this band called Bear on Fire.
Okay.
And they're super good. It's totally, it's almost like My Morning Jacket kind of style. It's really cool.
Oh, nice.
And then we just picked up this new band from Chicago called Wedding Dress, which is members of Maps and Atlases and Joan of Arc.
Right.
And they're so fucking good.
That's fantastic, man.
So yeah, it's a lot of work.
So that's kind of taken off too.
Yeah, it's really good.
That's great.
It takes a lot of time, but it's not like time that takes away from playing music. It's time more like if I'm at home, I answer tons of emails and phone calls and you know, go to our band shows and meetings and you know, that kind of stuff.
But, yeah. So you're surrounded.
Yeah.
You're surrounded by music now.
Yeah, it's really, the manager thing is really rewarding. You know, after 26 years of doing this, just, you know, being behind the drum set, it's pretty, you know, I mean, not that we're not all heavily involved in the business side of Minus the Bear, but kind of taking myself out of that, you know, being involved in it and just focusing on the business part of it it's really exciting. And
yeah. Well, you're able to, I mean, you've learned a lot.
Yep.
In the time that you've been doing the Minus the Bear stuff, you had to have
picked
up just tons of information from you know, just experiencing all this stuff. And it's amazing to, you know, it's got to be a good feeling along with, you know, very rewarding to help other bands out that believe in. So
yeah, it's great.
That's a good thing, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Aaron. This has been a real treat. chatting with you. I hope you enjoyed yourself.
I did.
Yeah.
The foot rub was really great while we were doing this. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, the shoulder rub is coming.
Yes.
Shoulder rub is always reserved for after the show.
Perfect.
Okay.
Happy ending.
That's right.
Dance.
Oh, editing that out. Okay. So let's plug your wares here. Where can we find out more about what's going on with Minus a Bear, Hand of the Hills, Home Management?
Social media, right? That's what you do these days.
The
Hand of the Hills.
The kids are doing.
The Hand of the Hills, according to you, have a Bandcamp page that I'm looking at right now. And then we have the Facebook and the Twitters.
Yeah.
And then the Minus the Bears have all the social medias as well. And
pretty easy to find all of it.
Yeah.
Just type it into a Google search.
Yeah, there's this thing called Goggle.
Yeah.
You goggle it. I think we have some shows coming up and then just going to pretty much be home writing. So that's it. And then
awesome.
The Phone Home Management has the social media. And if you haven't checked out our awesome bands, check them out because they're really good.
They're freaking great, man. Yeah, you're doing good work.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you very much. And we'll have links to all this stuff at our show blog at www.air-raid.net. And you can click on the archives tab while you're there too and check out all 200 and some odd episodes of the Air Raid podcast with people including Chris Walla from Death Cab for Cutie, Mark Arm from Mudhoney, how about Lou Barlow of Sebado, and Aaron Tate of Minus the Bear. I mean, come on. It's all right there. Rhyme.
Pretty wow. high
You guys
rankings,
need a lyricist for any of your bands?
Sure.
Because I am free.
I'll pull the manager card and get one of my bands to fire their singers.
There you go.
Sorry, you're taking Aaron
there
on.
There you go. All right. Thank you guys so much for listening, and have a great week. We're going to go out today with the song Thieves Road from the band Hand of the Hills with drumming by yours truly, Aaron Tate. Once again, thank you so much for coming on the show, man.
Thank you.
Real pleasure. All right. This is Thieves Road by Hand of the Hills, and we'll be back next week with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great week.